about annual reports and the and industry day and the site visit. And so we're really thankful to have Deborah Jackson and Randy Duran here from NSF to kind of kick this off. They're just going to do a little introduction, in part because for a lot of folks, there's a sense at ERCs that, oh, you know, no one reads the annual report and, you know, no one reads those site visit reports. We got to do them, but they're not really used. And in talking with Deborah and Randy, that turns out not to be the case. They actually are really useful. And I thought it'd be great to kick off with just why this is important to get right. So with that, Deborah, Randy, you guys are both co-hosts. So you're welcome to share your screens and kick it off here. And we are recording the session and we'll put the slides on the website for, I think everyone that was, that needs to be here is here, but okay. Folks can also refer to it later.
Can you see my...
You can, Deborah, yes.
Okay. Let's see what happens. Of course, I always do this and I'm always end up showing you the wrong setting. So I'm going to swap. Now, can you see...
Yes, there you go. Yes. You got it.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Okay. Yeah, well, so this is me just doing a learning curve here. Basically, he's already given you the topic. What I'm going to do, I only have one slide, so it's not going to, oops. What happened? Let's try it again. Have to swap. How did I screw that up? Okay, I need more practice doing this.
Here you go. That's good.
Yeah, you're back.
All right. Okay. So I'm going to be very simple and straightforward. Basically, for the ILOs, there are expectations from the annual reporting guidelines is that you give us a sense of who your membership is. And starting with Gen 4, also the stakeholders. So that would be your IPAB or IAB members and the stakeholders. You're going to report that to us. And that's really quite important. What I'm going to just say is that don't focus on recruiting anyone that will, you know, sign up with you. Try to make sure the members that you recruit have strong overlap with your long-term goals and can help support it. So you're not putting energy into entities that don't necessarily bring that to the table. I do read and pay attention to what you write in the annual report about the innovation ecosystem. Sometimes I have to go back and generate tables or feedback to other parts of NSF about what's going on in the ERCs. We get a lot of inquiries, not just from the front office in engineering, but also from the NSF director's office. About and the ERCs are an entity that they like to come to us and ask for data because they know we collect it. Very few of the other center programs at NSF collect have a standardized data collection process that has been in place 30 plus years, so we can. What that does is allows us to compare across the currently active ERCs, but we can also do longitudinal studies, and we do get a lot of requests for that. So it's really important for you to pull your data together and make sure that it's accurate. So we have a good picture of how your ERC is evolving, but we also oftentimes are comparing what you're reporting to us across the centers as well. So that's one reason why it's typically very important. Second point is that you will notice that you're asked to, you've noticed, or if you haven't yet, you will eventually figure this out. We do request that the ERCs supply us with certification of the IAB or IPAB dues payments. And so that has to be certified by somebody in your sponsored programs office, basically a university official. The reason why that is now in the works, let me stop sharing. This is the reason why that's in the works now is because we did have an incident many years ago before I became part of the ERC program, where one of the center directors was just treating that as a checkbox. And so he generated a list of companies that as a checkbox that they had no relationships with, okay, and submitted them as the members of the ERC. And it came out to light later, because that is a requirement that you have to have industry members. That's a requirement for getting the funding. Okay. He was accused of fraud. We thought, they're going to just slap him on the wrist. But long story short, it ended up going to court, and he happened to get a judge who hated PhDs. So he got jail time, okay? After that, we were like, okay, it's too tempting for the researchers who are, pressed for time, and they're trying to pull this report together in a hurry. It's way too tempting for somebody else to think, here, let me just send some names in. So that's why we require the signature authorization certification by a university official. It's really to keep the university folks out of trouble. Okay. Anyway, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. Your turn, Randy.
So shall I continue?
It's up to you.
Yes, please.
Okay. So I'm going to share my screen and I'm going to... Okay. Go to that, share, and I'm going to, and if I start my PowerPoint, I may have to do the same thing. Are you seeing my screen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now, that, and that's probably is that the right one?
Yes,
or do I
it need... is it is
okay
it
good. Is. All right, so I've just got three slides, and Deborah and Scott suggested that I talk to you because of my background. So by way of introduction, I was 20 years exactly at the University of Florida before moving on to a position as a professor and reporting to the Vice President for Research and Economic Development for 10 years at Louisiana State University before then coming to NSF. At NSF, I ran the biomaterials program, a conventional three-year single investigator grant program out of the Division of Materials Research for about 2.5 years before Deborah and her colleagues made me an offer that I couldn't refuse. So back to the beginning of my career as an associate professor, and I think the beginning of my full professorship at the University of Florida, I had the life building emolument of being funded by a Gen 2 engineering research center. So as a faculty member, not in an engineering department, but with an engineering degree that had a graduate student and some of my summer salary funded for about 6 years. And so I bring the perspective of a faculty member, my students, my postdocs that were funded by the ERC and going through this process, including site visits and annual reports, Gen 2 version. And also advising groups of faculty who were aspirants for engineering research centers when I was in the Office of Research and Economic Development. And my message is going to be a little bit different than Deborah's, but I think will resonate with some things that Scott said. And that is that We do value your annual report and the site visit. And part of my message to you is that I encourage you to take control of the value of your annual report and your site visit and the response and consider them as a grouping. And specifically, we would all aspire to submitting those, it's usually about 10 pages in an annual report is going to inspire praise. So the innovation ecosystem in your ERC is doing well for this and this and this reason. But I encourage you to think about thinking about this process in such a way that you inspire through a combination of the annual report and the site visit presentation and your engagement in that process, a high quality site visit report. The quality of the site visit report and the feedback that you get, I'm going to make the case is going to be a very, very valuable thing. So in addition to the praise that we would all want you to get, I would say that it's almost more important to think about this in a way that you get substance. So I've now noted the number 53. And Scott and I did not talk about this, but I don't think that he's going to quibble too much if I reveal that 53 is associated with Scott. So the number 53 that I put down there turns out to be something that I got when I looked, and I'm not going to reveal any of his other secrets, but when I looked at Scott's year 9 annual report. Scott, do you have a guess as to what that 53 would be?
Year 9 report, I would say that was the number of industry members for that year.
It could have been. No, it was something a little bit different that inspired me. I did a search, and what I found were 53 occurrences of the word innovation in that report out of more than 100 pages. So there were 53 occurrences of the word innovation in that annual report. And the message that I want to give to you is one that I hoped I would see from Scott, but I saw in bucket loads. So hooray, Scott. And that is that those 53 occurrences of the word innovation ecosystem usually, of course, occurred in approximately the 10 pages that were that section and the executive summary. But more importantly, the other occurrences, dozens and dozens of other occurrences of innovation in Scott's year 9 report were scattered throughout the body of the report. And what, as I went and paged through, here's innovation. He's talking about the innovation ecosystem in the EWD section. There's the innovation ecosystem in task 2, and so forth. And so the take-home message of that number 53 is that you have a responsibility to not just populate the 10 pages that are your section of the annual report, but and I would like to inspire you to think about adding comments, as Scott did, about the innovation ecosystem's activities throughout all four foundational elements and not just IE. A second point is related to feedback. So the blue font above is the substance that I aspire that you would get from a high quality site visit report. But in addition to that, I have a specific idea that Deborah and Scott and I talked about, and that is that you have the opportunity to influence that whole process. Not so much the annual report process, but the site visit process that goes along with it. And specifically, you have the opportunity, if you choose to put forward the name of not one, but a slate of innovation ecosystem-centric site visit team members. And my message is that in doing that, different program directors program managers will react differently. We can't promise that we're going to get these people, but I think that Deborah and myself would say we would welcome a slate of potential innovation ecosystem review panel members. In doing that, there's a couple related things. One is that we could learn from you those individuals that you think would do an unbiased but really valuable job of looking at that element of the annual report and the site visit presentation. And in doing so, it would for us strengthen the site visit team. But from your perspective, what I've noticed is that Deborah and our colleagues and thankfully me we have a pretty strong persuasive power. And so we may be able to get a yes from an aspirant that you'd like to have lay eyes on your activities that would make a really big difference potentially in ways that we may be able to get a yes where you would have difficulties getting a yes. And so in doing so, if we succeeded in that, then you would, in a small way, influence the composition of the site visit team. And with, I think we could all agree that with the right person laying eyes on your activities and asking questions and so forth, it could be very, very valuable.
Randy, I hate to interrupt, but quick question about that. That's the idea of nominating somebody is a new one for me. I assume we should not be nominating people who are already on our IAB or members of our partnership program. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And as you do this, you should work with your PI, of course, and bounce this off of your PI. And you should work with your program director. But we need to vet that these people do not have a conflict of interest. And anybody who's that's already funding you is going to have a conflict of interest. Anybody who's on your advisory boards is going to have a conflict of interest. And I'm so glad that you asked that question. It's a really good one, because let's say that you succeeded and you got, with Deborah and another NSF program director, we were able to get on a site visit team a person who had an incredible industrial experience and was a member of the National Academy of Engineering, and his citation from the National Academy of Engineering was dead on in the field that he was doing the review on, and we had high hopes for him, and he came through on some of the things that he was able to just off the cuff talk about because of his really deep knowledge. Now, it's a long-winded way of saying that that person had the PI of that particular effort had tried to recruit them, and they hadn't gotten him yet. So we were able to get him. Something that my colleagues have just clarified for me that I think is relevant here is that having that person or a person of that caliber on the site visit team allows them to take a deep dive into your effort, CQN, for instance. And it allows your team to try and win over a person of that very, very high caliber. And working with and informing, I think you need to inform your PI and inform the NSF program director. But after the site visit, it is my understanding that in most cases, you need to check on this and be careful and follow up on the rules. You could, to the best of my knowledge, approach that individual and then engage them a year later or a couple of years later to be on one of your advisory boards or to be a collaborator. Now, if you do that, instantly they have a conflict of interest and they can't serve on the site visit team again. But it is a valuable route that is in your hands think about the composition of the site visit team and with it the process. And so I put in this the other arrows there that in doing this, you're defining a cohort of people that are looking at your activity. And the more you can refine that cohort of people and the better quality they are, the more it sort of becomes a dream team looking at your work on a yearly basis. Now, what Scott did in those dozens and dozens of insertions of his efforts within the other foundational elements is every year he's doing that, he's informing his colleagues, oh, here's exactly how we connect with what you're doing. And he is expanding his cohort and in ways that he's able to define. So moving forward, my summary on this particular slide, which is slide one of three, is that while your annual report needs to be responsive, it needs to satisfy the criteria that Deborah alluded to and others that are very well defined, I encourage you to think about this process as being beyond responsive and an intentional process. A second point, slide two, is a pitfall that I've observed is a natural one. We're all human.
Just a quick question, Scott. You had somebody lined up to cover some material. How much time do they need?
Well, it's me. Yeah, we're about half an hour in, and okay. This was to be a 5-minute sort of introduction. So if you can, pick up the pace, maybe that would be.
I will. So there's a couple pitfalls, and second point is think about the time evolution of the annual report and the site visit process. These recur every year, and a well-done report allows the job to be done better. So my last line is that annual report and site visit report should be beyond simply being responsive to the bare minimum guideline, and that my hope is that you'll think about using the report and the site visit process to add value to the whole process. And there you've got a few bullets, and I'm sorry that I've overgone my time.
No, that's so, okay. It's good information, Randy, and thanks for sharing that. And I'm glad to clarify, 53 is also my age. And so when you were going down that path, I was thinking, what kind of things was he searching about me? And it is also
actually,
somewhere.
It's supposed to be 42.
Is that all? Thank
everybody,
you,
half of you smiled, so you know what 42
is.
That's
the nicest thing anyone said to me all day. Thank you. Really
I was
good information.
Talking about hitchhikers.
Yeah, and we the answer to life, the universe, and everything. Yes. So.
Yeah.
That's right. And yeah, and Randy, didn't want to cut you off, but thanks for sharing that. And can you guys see my screen?
I think you have to, yeah, now you're, yes.
Yes, you see that, all right. Great.
You probably know how to launch it without showing us all your dirty laundry.
There we go.
Scott, hopefully it should be up there. So yeah, thank you both Deborah and Randy for sharing that. And Randy, maybe you know some of the information you're sharing about the SVT, the site visit team might be worthwhile to have on an upcoming working group call with the broader ILO organization. So I think that might be really useful information for them. So I'm gonna go a little bit faster than I was planning to. This might be an appropriate slide given the Russia situation, but I wanted to convey that you know, the site visit is important because especially for the renewal visits, you know, the outcome of the center and continued funding is really dependent upon that report that the NSF gets. And one of the, for ILOs and for the stakeholder owners, really helping convey, and this is to Randy's point, you know, what impact is the ERC industry program making? And, you know, Randy, you mentioned that the innovation ecosystem was populated throughout. I didn't actually go and populate it throughout those other sections. One of the things that we really worked hard at with CNT was helping engage faculty in the industry program. So when they were writing their sections, they were actually infusing the innovation ecosystem material into their sections, which I loved. And that if you had read the year five report, it would have looked very different, right? Because it took a lot of education to help the faculty get oriented. But it's one of the, you're exactly right, Randy. It's one of the main purposes of the industry section of the report and the whole report is really what impact is the industry program making. That's one of the key things the NSF wants to know and that Congress wants to know. Just some logistics to start out with, you know, working backwards, it usually took us 6 to 8 weeks to write. Some organizations go faster, some slower, but I usually tried to book at least a month of my time to make sure that that I could have a quality submission and to review other sections, right? Proofreading other sections was a key piece of it also, which Randy alluded to. And one of the biggest long poles in the tent here was what Deborah described, which is the certification process, having the Office of Sponsored Programs certify that yes, in fact, these industry members have paid dues and are part of the center. OSP, if they're anything like my OSP, they don't like to hear the day before, hey, we need you to certify all this data because we got to get into the ERC web tomorrow. Giving them plenty of notice and 8 weeks is not too early to let them know, here's when we need this data from you. And you know, I always used it as a nice opportunity to reinvigorate their relationship with OSP because staying on their good side is a valuable thing for the ILO role. And another piece of the annual report that took some time was the SWOT, because it's not just you, the ILO, writing the SWOT, obviously. It's the IB. It's the industry members looking at the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats of the center overall. And so connecting with the IB chairperson to really run this effort, and you know, obviously it takes a lot of handholding from the ILO to do that with them. They're busy, they've got jobs. So helping them out, scheduling the IAB calls, you know, facilitating discussions around this is really important to do in advance so that by the time the annual report is due, you've got a robust SWOT to include in that report. Obviously the innovation ecosystem section.
Scott, do you mind yeah, if I just maybe add a couple things?
That yeah, please. Oh, Schaefer, please, go ahead.
So what I after running the SWOT a couple of times, what we realized, A, we always do it at the same time we sort of do one of our biannual meetings with our IABs. So we kind of tie it in. So first they hear from all of our PIs or hear from our testbed leaders right before doing the SWOT. So it's all sort of fresh in the mind, I think, as in sort of a whole meeting. And then the other thing I realized is that pre-populating it really helps them out, right? Like it's a lot harder to write in black than it is to write in red, right? And so they could, by putting it up there first and then also leveraging whatever we had on there from the previous year, makes that process go a lot faster. Because the first couple of times I did it, it was laborious and it seemed to take forever. And then once we had that sort of template down, say, okay, what do we think last year? How have we improved it, changed it, modified it? What should we add? What should we subtract? suddenly that process became a 15-minute, 20-minute discussion versus a two-hour discussion. So just something, I guess maybe that's something that I learned after doing it a few times, if that helps at all.
You are exactly right, Schaefer. And yeah, the same over here too. We would not recycle, but pull up the previous years. And it was a nice exercise, right? To see, you know, what things were weaknesses last year. Are they still weaknesses this year? You know, or did we do something about them? Yeah. And if we didn't do something about them, why didn't we, you know? Have the threats gone away or have they only magnified? It's a nice year-to-year check. You're exactly right. Not only does it help logistically save starting from scratch, but it also gives you a sense for what progress is the center making. And then that's something that you can also fold into your innovation ecosystem section, being able to demonstrate, hey, this was a weakness before and we've addressed it. And now, you know, maybe the IB even thinks it's a strength now. That's key. Good point, Schaefer.
Right.
You know, likewise for the innovation ecosystem section, if you're writing it for the first time because your center is Gen 4 and just starting, that's tough. And you can leverage section, you know, the format used by other ILOs. And a lot of this I'm going to talk about, a lot of the annual report and the site visit is prescriptive. You know, the NSF is very clear about what they need, what components are to be included and what they look like. So I'm not necessarily talking about those pieces because you can find those with NSF, but I'm talking more about the art and the behind the scenes, how you pull it off. So, you know, the NSF guidelines specify exactly what the innovation ecosystem sections need to include and what they have to look like. But again, leveraging what you've written before, you know, unless your membership program's really changed, you know, you still have the same membership roles, right? These different levels, the membership fees are the same, the dues. So being able to just port that over from previous years is valuable. Yeah, Stephen.
One of the issues we had, so last year was our first annual report, and we're going to obviously pull that up when we create the one this year. One of the issues we have is that a lot of the discussion and a lot of the narrative and a lot of the tables that we have to fill out on ERC Web are about technology transfer. And we hadn't had any yet, to be blunt, because it's early. We have lots of activity. We have lots of people interested. I just this morning got the paperwork for the 13th member of my industry advisory board. So, yay.
Congratulations.
I'm really pleased with the activity. But, you know, it's the difference between, you know, activity and output. We're a rocking horse, rocking frantically, but we're not moving anywhere in terms.
Right. You know, I think for early in your center's lifetime, that's very understandable. I don't think the NSF has an expectation that year one, you're going to have this flotilla of IP and licensing. And in fact, for some technologies, depending on what your center's involved in, you know, like for ours, for neurotechnology, it's such a nascent field. That you know, we're not doing basic research, but it's still very fundamental research that even when it's generating IP, the companies are still like, yeah, we want to see it a little bit more developed before we plunge in. So I think NSF understands that. I see Deborah nodding her head.
Was just going to say that, especially for the first year, everybody goes, oh, we don't have any results to show, no publications, no this, no IP, et cetera, et cetera. Really just look at it as an exercise the first year, just in going through the process. And like Schaefer was saying, you know, that it takes that first time around, it takes all this extra time because you're trying to figure out, well, what are the things that we're lining up and on. But if you go through the exercise in that first year or so, maybe even 2 years, then it's very streamlined when you do have real stuff to, but it's just getting you to go through the motion so you understand the process and what's needed. That's the way you should look at it your first time.
That's good to know.
Don't lose any sleep over that at all, Stephen, and for others that are brand new centers, for sure. And you know, one of the things that the ILOs do is that more than just writing your own innovation ecosystem section, there are other pieces that we're asked to write, you know, like the highlights for the year. You know, there's research highlights, there's an industry or an innovation ecosystem highlight, et cetera. So for those pieces, and even for the innovation ecosystem section of the annual report, being able to quick and ready access what's happened over the year can sometimes be challenging. And so one of the things that I do, and this is not a have to at all, in fact, a lot of what I'll be sharing is not a have to, but a trick that I've used is creating myself for myself a folder that's called Next Annual Report. And anytime anything happens during the year that is of all, you know, at all interesting, I stick it in there. You know, we had a friend of mine works for Seattle Times and telling her about the stuff we were doing. She wanted to come and interview some folks, and she ended up writing a Seattle Times article about a collaboration between an industry member and a research team at the university. And she emailed me the article, and it's awesome. Slide that right into that folder. You know, John gets hired by one of our industry members. That's fantastic. And he sends me an email. Thanks for your help in making it happen. You bet. I slide that over in the folder, you know, so things related to students and research and industry, you know, by the end of the year, then I've got this folder filled with like 90 things that I can choose from to highlight and kind of rank them in terms of impact and importance. And again, it gets that impact piece. Yeah. Schaefer.
Yeah. I think one other thing, especially Stephen, the way you were kind of describing it, is if you've put together a bunch of proposals, right? Even if nothing has come in or you haven't actually signed any contracts with any, either your IB members or industry members or anything of that nature, just the sheer fact of doing the proposal work, look, there's essentially technology transfer that's happening just in the discussion of putting together a proposal. And so you can kind of lean into that a little bit. It's like all, you know, generated all this excitement because we're doing 12 different proposals with 8 different companies, whether they're on your IB or not. You know, sometimes that's still a demonstration of the willingness to transfer the technology over.
Yeah, that helps. Appreciate it.
That's very true. Yeah, and same with the IP, and if you're involved in those discussions with industry members, you know, I put that in the report. It's not actually IP transferred. I don't put it in the ERC web table as such, but being able to in the narrative show, you know, we've got 3 companies who are looking at this particular technology right now, and we're trying to move that through the process. That's key. In general, you know, collaboration with your with the rest of your center. I mentioned the timing already, planning for it, being a reviewer for other sections. You know, it's easy to let the report grind the rest of your job to a halt, and that's ought not be what happens. So, you know, just plan for that. Plan time to be able to do this well. And then, you know, lastly, work closely with the ERC web tables person in our. Some centers, it's the ALO that's working with the ERC web tables. In other centers, it's the administrative director. Whoever's doing it, whether it's you or someone else, you know, work closely with them because there's a lot of tables that the NSF needs filled in and a lot of data that goes in there that you know, your first time around, you might not be tracking it. You know, the first year I was involved in this, I got the question from the AD, hey, yeah, how many students were hired by industry members this year? I don't know. with year one, I didn't know. But from then on, you betcha, I knew. And in my office, on my whiteboard, there's a little section of, you know, who got hired by whom. And throughout the year, I would just write there. And at the end of the year, Poom might have this long list of hiring that I could refer to. So, you know, you'll get the hang of it, but look at those ERC web tables and start throughout the year to collect that data. So it's not a chore for you at the end of the year. Instead, it's just a population of the ERC web tables. Yeah, Stephen.
Another mechanical question, or this is a mechanical question. I'm sorry to bother you. When we did this last year, getting the data into ERC web was one thing. Getting the tables out and inserting them in the flow of the document just mechanically was an enormous pain in the whatever. And to the point that, you know, I would add one item to a table and that would cause repagination of the next 200 pages. Yep. Is there a way we can just staple them all to the back?
We really put them in appendices at the back. Yeah, we did it in an appendancy format so that all the ERC web tables were at the back for that very reason. Because, yeah, it was a nightmare just formatting the whole document that, you know, ends up being a 200 page document. At the time, they're shorter now, but at the time they were unwieldy. So yeah, I don't know if Deborah or Randy, you have comments on that, but we always put them as appendices, and that worked best for us.
I would welcome that. Yeah. Can I interject with one thing that you said, Scott? Yeah. Is you mentioned about not grinding your program to a halt with a bandwidth of contributing to other sections. I agree with that. Balance all that. However, the one thing that I would say you should grind your, my personal opinion, you should grind your program to a halt for is those 2 or 3 days of the site visit. I think you should be there as much as you can.
We're getting to that. Jumping ahead. We are getting, this is just the annual report is all we're talking about. But yeah, we will get to the site visit and the industry day, but we're going to have to go quickly here. Let me just mention a couple of impacts of COVID. Obviously, there's more limited engagement opportunities. We haven't attended conferences as much. You know, put that in there. If for my graph, you know, we saw a nice uptick in growth in this year program. COVID hit and it kind of leveled off. The growth wasn't there, in part because we weren't attending conferences. Companies didn't know what was going to happen. Everyone encountered the same thing, right? So it affected all the ERCs the same and differently. But being able to report that if your trajectory has changed because of COVID, which they likely did, being able to just put that into the narrative is valuable. Virtual collaborations on the writing obviously is a thing too. I'm gonna go quickly here. Stephen, did you have another question? Or is your hand just up? Okay, up from before. So I want to get into the more fun stuff that Randy was getting us to, which is great. The site visit and industry day, and absolutely to Randy's point, being there is key. But for us at least, we did industry day the day before the site visit, which is typically how centers do it. I don't remember if it was a requirement that it be done that way, but that's how we always did it. So I'm going to talk about the industry day first and then the site visit. It's really your day to shine. It is your day. So I spent a lot of time planning for industry day. And yeah, to Randy's point, I did sometimes grind the rest of the program to a halt because of industry day. Because really my goal was to make it value added for the industry members. I wanted this to be one of the benefits of their membership is being able to attend Industry Day. My goals for Industry Day, and I think yours too, ought to be, building a network between CNT and industry. You know, they're already members, but having that engagement, having that rich interaction is really key. Making sure the industry knows about our research. That was a key component of Industry Day. Making and providing brainstorming opportunities for collaborative research during Industry Day, right? I wanted to make sure that no industry rep attended Industry Day and went home without thinking about how they could collaborate with us on research. Because not only does that lead to better research when the labs are collaborating with industry, but it's also it's income for the center, right? Sponsored projects bring in monies that keep the center going. It was also an opportunity to meet the students. I saw it as an opportunity to promote workforce development and future hiring. I also wanted to make it an education opportunity for industry members. That was really key to me. I wanted them to be able to go away having learned something that benefited them and their jobs. And I also wanted to have momentum for projects. If there's a project going on between the center and the member, I wanted that to be promoted. Yeah, Stephen, question.
That looks fabulous. I am curious, this seems similar to me to something we call annual meeting of the center. I don't know if that's a standard thing or an alternative thing. We don't do that right before the site visit. We do it several months before, but that's where we talk about, for example, SWAT with board members, kind of help facilitate that. Lots of social activities, lots of recruiting activities once a year. A lot of things on your list that are like good pointers for us, but do you do that in addition to this day before the site visit?
We do. The way I'd always timed it was, industry day and site visit. And then about 6 months later, we had what we called the retreat. Now I'm calling it the industry summit. Now that we're graduated from NSF and are doing things a little differently. And I think it kind of sounds what you're describing. Sounds like what you're describing, Stephen, is we do a lot of the same activities during the retreat. It's just the focus is a little bit primarily research oriented during the retreats. And it's not as we haven't promoted the retreats as much as the industry day. And the reason for that is because when I could get people to fly for industry day, I could get them to stay over one extra night for the site visit, right? And we haven't gotten to that yet, but having your industry members there in person for the site visit is really key. And we'll get there. But I wanted to show, this is a little bit older agenda, but again, you don't have to do it the way I did it. And Schaefer, feel free to chime in on differences you've done. But I'll walk you through what I did because it seemed to meet the mark of all those goals that I described for you for an industry day. The night before, people would fly in on Sunday, and that same night, I would have a dinner event for the students and industry members. And I would actually have a little place card at the table where I would sit the industry members down next to the students who were involved in projects that we were working on collaboratively. So they could have those discussions. And I would kind of mix and match people if they weren't having, if they didn't have projects with industry. But my goal was to foster interaction. And there's been hires that came from the introductions and interaction that happened during the industry student dinner. And students would love it. I would have, you know, almost all the center students come. Well, it's free food, right? And two, the industry folks were there already and didn't have anything to do other than check into the hotel and unpack the bag. So it was really a good event for promoting that kind of workforce development. I would also, you know, print out this agenda, make sure everyone had it at their hotels. I really wanted to make the industry members feel like they were our guests and treat them well. I didn't want them to wonder where to go or what was going to happen or what to do. I wanted it to be a seamless, stress-free event for them where they just walked out of the event feeling like, wow, that was so valuable to come to. And these little things like having the agenda for them at their hotel ready with a little gift bag and mints and we put together lots of other little stuff for them really made it helpful for them. The next day for the actual industry day itself, you know, I'd kick off a little introduction. I'd have the director give a strategic vision for the center. You know, what are we doing? And then I talk about the industry program. What are we doing there? I also had, I called the industry round robin, but I would have everyone was given 2 minutes, no slides, but just to stand up and share who they were, why they're a member of the center, and what their company is doing that intersects the center research. That people said was one of the most valuable parts of industry day for them, getting to know each other. And there are some members that became members of the center only because they wanted to sit at the same table as the Medtronics and the Microsofts of the world. You know, so having that introduction and collaboration, different, we're a pre-competitive space, right? Medtronic and LivaNova wrote an IEEE publication because they got to know each other through the round robin event. So having the industry members understand who each other are is really valuable. Then I would obviously go over the research overviews. One thing I'll say about this, and I know I'm going fast, but we're almost out of time. Helping the faculty understand that the research, that the industry day was not a dry run for the site visit was key. Because the site visit has very different goals than industry day. And when I arrived at the CNT, faculty really viewed their presentations to industry as a practice session for what they were going to deliver to the NSF site visit team. And that couldn't be more wrong, right? Because what the site visit team wants to understand is much more about how the NSF funds have been used to further the research and to make impact. What industry really wants to know is how can their company benefit from the research the center is doing and where are there gaps in that research that they can come alongside and partner with us, right? To fill those gaps. So helping faculty understand that it's really two different presentations that they want to give, one for the industry members and one for the site visit team was key. We would do a student poster presentation. So again, more research focus and more student interaction. Then I would do a series of workshops. There were several different workshops all running in parallel. So industry members would choose which workshop they wanted to go to. And here's an example of one meeting, the workshop sessions. So I had to send this to all the industry members in advance, and they could choose what session they wanted to attend. We had one where we were developing a new type of microchip that lots of folks were interested in. If you are new to the center, you might choose this one, which is about what thrusts and test beds are. You know, the NSF vernacular isn't necessarily intuitive to industry. So helping them understand the structure of the center and what we're all about is here. There were some on some technical things that they could learn about EEG and the state of the art of that. I had a session on this particular year on neuroethics and industry. This section actually resulted in a publication that just got published last year. And I'm still getting traction on that publication now with some interviews with media about neuroethics and industry. MathWorks is one of our center members. They were really keen about coming and seeing, getting input from faculty and students about how their product was getting used. And they wanted to showcase, give a sneak peek about a future feature that was going to be released and get input on that. So that was an option. My education director was going to do a BrainWorks TV episode and needed some funding from industry for that. So those interested in that could go there. And then in the same time, I had some closed door meetings. These were sponsored projects that were ongoing at the time, where folks, the industry person and the lab could meet to talk about the research. And I put this in the breakout workshop options, not because anyone could choose to go to these are closed, but I wanted industry to see that, oh gosh, Oculus is involved in two projects for the center. How come we're not involved in any projects for the center? I really wanted to kind of promote without giving away things that we couldn't share, what companies were involved in research as a way to leverage additional research ideas from other companies. So that was how I structured some of that industry day agenda. You know, I'll show you this really quickly. I'm happy to share this with anyone if you'd like it. This was my planning checklist for industry day. You know, it would start 12 weeks out from the event, you know, just figuring out the venue and what we're going to do, the topic list. At the end of industry day, I would always give folks an evaluation form to fill out that informed how to do the next industry day. And I would use that to do this planning, the SWOT analysis we've talked about, notifying speakers, you know, who's going to speak on the agenda, making sure they're all, you know, their calendars are blocked, the registrations. Hotel, food, logistics, you know, I'd have my AD and my admin help me with this, but it was a lot to pull together. And having something organized like this, like I said, I'm happy to share the sheet, not that anyone has to use it, but I just captured everything in here, like placemats. When everyone would come down at their table, they would have a CNT mug and a pad of paper and a pen and, you know, a little bit of swag for them and a name tent. And a folder, and the folder had our current IP report and the industry section from our annual report that we had just written, an updated industry brochure from our marketing person and the survey that I talked about. So they'd have all of that. So again, helping make it feel like a very professional meeting, the kind that they're used to going to, help them be more engaged. Topics and agenda items, even organizing their flights and hotel and their meals and getting their name right on the badges and where they were staying. It was a lot. Oh, and here's the evaluation. I would then, you know, get their feedback on the evaluation. And then importantly, I would present this back to the center leadership afterwards. Here's what we did. Here's what the folks from industry most liked about industry day. And I would do the same thing for the site visit. And then have debrief notes that I would look at next year for the planning. So it's a lot, I know, but again, industry day is your chance to really shine and engage industry members and make them want to stay with the center. And you know what? If their renewal was just about due before they got on the plane to go home, I would mention that to them. Hey, yeah, next month renewal due. How's that looking for you guys? And it was a great reminder for them to say, yeah, I'm going back and talk to my CEO or I'm going back and tell my accounting department to cut you guys a check. You know, that's all some of the goals from industry day. I know I went through that really fast and we're at the end of our time now, but questions about industry day.
My one comment might be that I wish I'd seen that like 5 years ago, but I think everything you said is spot on, and I wish we had probably done a better job of that. You know, I'll say we took a subset of what you did, And, you know, we tried to have a luncheon where we sat industry members down with, you know, tried to get industry folks to commit to it and then populate the tables with students, right? So sort of the dinner for eight sort of idea, right? You had the sort of one industry person there and seven students around and that were interested in, you know, that area of either expertise or that type of company to maybe go work for, something like that, just to try and foster interactions there. The poster sessions, I think, is an easy low hanging fruit to do because that's always a great way for them to engage on a specific topic and go around and see that. I usually have like a dinner where I always invite the PIs and the industry folks and again try to have them at tables together so that they could collaborate and come up with ideas. I find the creative flow of ideas usually comes after the second glass of wine, so making sure that there is some you know, beverage of choice there to help that as well. But yeah, I looked on with maybe a slight envy, I guess, of maybe not in terms of the amount of time you probably put into it. I don't envy, like it looked like a lot of hard work. But I think that would be a fantastic event to do and showcase the benefits of the center and drive retention, right? Which is one of the hardest things about being in ERC. You can get people really interested at first, but then it's like, can you withstand the changeover in personnel at the company? Can you withstand the changeover and whatnot? And retention to me has always been one of the hardest challenges. So
absolutely. No, you're exactly right. And this was my one big in-person opportunity to retain members. And as much as I could, I tried to get their membership renewal to be right after the industry day, you know, set up their timing so that their renewal was coming right after industry day. Because when that happened, I never had someone say, yeah, no, I just attended industry day and site visit, and I don't think I'm going to renew the center. That never happened to me doing it this way. I will say after industry day, I mean, it's an exhausting day, right? But things weren't over because at the end of that day, I had myself and the IAB chairperson would have a closed door session with the industry members about the site visit the next day, right? Because things shift. The IB is the guest at industry day. It's all about them and how we can collaborate and brainstorm and get them what they need. The site visit is really about the NSF and communicating to the NSF. And so I would shift expectations or set expectations and shift that mindset at the end of industry day. And in particular, we would talk about the closed door session with the NSF, right? So the IB members during the site visit team, the site visit, have a closed door session with the site visit team and they might be asked anything. And for me, I never wanted to be surprised by something the site visit team would hear. You know, if there was an issue, I wanted to know about it before hearing about it from the site visit team, right? So I would talk to the IAB. I wouldn't script what they were supposed to say or anything like that. Mostly I listened and the IAB chairperson would run it. I would coach them how to run the meeting. But I remember one year in particular, there was a person there who had never been to site to any center events. They weren't the champion. They weren't the rep from the center. They were an additional person that came and they were like, oh yeah, you know, communication. I just don't get anything from you guys, but they weren't on our mailing list. We always went through the champion. And so I added them and resolved that what could have been perceived as a communication issue during the closed door session with the site visit team, I was able to just remedy that. Oh yeah, we didn't have you on our list, but I'm changing that. And they were really happy. So just having those conversations. So one, that they know what to expect with the site visit, and two, that they know this closed door session is coming, and just that they can communicate with their experiences to the NSF was really key. Yeah, I mentioned the educational opportunities. I'm going to keep going. I know that we're over time now and people might need to drop off and that's fine. This is being recorded. So I'm going to keep going here and shift gears to the site visit. But before that, let me just check the chat. Yeah, I wouldn't have to hop off. Like I mentioned, the site visit, it is different than industry day. The focus is on the site visit team. IB is still there. Hopefully you've been able to retain your IB members to stay over for the site visit. Again, that's why one of the reasons why we have industry right before the site visit. But the focus for the site visit is about what impact is the ERC industry program making. That's what were there to communicate to the site visit team. It's a broader audience, more people are in attendance, and time is key. They're a lot more prescriptive about, you know, making sure we stay on time because there's a lot going on during the site visit. But preparing is important. I recommend that, you know, when you're standing in front of the site visit team, talking about the innovation ecosystem over the past year, rehearsing that with your center directors, your education director, anyone who will listen to you talk, practice doing your presentation before the site visit. It helps it go much more smoothly. See what questions they have. Also, I recommend researching the site visit team. I think Randy alluded to this a little bit earlier. Get to know who they are, where they come from. There's many times where I've done this and I found that either they went to my alma mater or we'd worked with the same PI in the past or, you know, any number of different connections. That's fantastic when you're having your breaks during the presentations and you're milling around munching on cookies and drinking coffee, being able to pull up something to talk about and demonstrate that connection and be able to get to know them. One, they're great. If they're on the site as a team, they're great people to know anyway. They're fantastic to add to your network, but being able to make a connection with them is aided by knowing who they are in advance. So do your homework. And as Randy said, absolutely be there. I can't imagine not being at the site visit. Definitely don't give a presentation and then hit the road. One, in part because they have the overnight questions for you, which we haven't even talked about yet. So being engaged and fully participatory and then the site visit is really key for your center. Like I said, rehearse your industry update, address the items in the SWOT. What I used to do, I don't know, Schaefer, if you've done this, but in my slides for the site visit team, if it was something that they had mentioned in a previous year as an issue or something we wanted addressed or something that they encouraged us to do, I would put a little yellow, like exploding bubble saying, you know, as seen in, you know, like the as seen in TV, I would do as seen from previous SVT and tell them how, hey, last year you guys recommended we do this. So we did it. And here's what the outcomes were. Here's how the impact that it made. It was a really good idea. And it wasn't just about stroking egos. It was about documenting that, hey, we valued their feedback and what they suggested we do. Not only did we listen to it, but it had the impact that the site visit team wanted. And we thanked them for that. And that was that helped build the collaboration because a lot of people go into the site visit feeling, for right or wrong, feeling like it's a little bit adversarial. You know, they're holding the purse strings. The center doesn't get the rest of its money unless we appease them. And I think that's the wrong perspective to have. Really, it's about a collaboration. It's about the site visit team who has this background, deep knowledge in your fields of research, being able to give you insight and mentoring and feedback on how to make your program even better. And so I tried to mold my presentations in that form. That kind of highlighted that collaboration. And yeah, you guys said this, we tried it out and wow, it worked. Awesome, thank you. You said just this other thing, we tried it out, it didn't work so well, but here's why. And here's how we're gonna try it differently next year. That for me has always led to positive interactions with the site visit team around the innovation ecosystem.
So I guess I usually take it, maybe my background being more on the entrepreneurial side of things, right? So it's sort of the pitch session, I think of them as investors. And you don't, you know, to a certain degree, you'll have an adversarial relationship with investors, but ultimately you should have an alignment of goals and incentives. And so I think you sort of go in with that mindset. It's like, they're here to pretty much help you. And so if they would provide comments or feedbacks, either during the presentation or during the SWOT, like I would always be, well, thank you. I hadn't thought about it like that. You know, this was the reason why we're going down this path, but, you know, happy to keep looking at it and see whether or not there's a different direction we want to go. You know, a lot of this centered around like sustainability and things where you're sort of projecting stuff out versus near term, or, you know, and just be willing to be very open to listening to them, right? That to me, I think is, they want to be heard. They're there for their experience and just being very receptive to whatever the comments they have and not trying to be argumentative in any sort of fashion. You can say, oh, that's a great point. This is the data that we had that led us to this decision or direction, but I am happy to look at this again or chat with you offline about how we might be able to implement that or why you think that or something along those lines. So So you have more of a dialogue rather than just a, to your point, Scott, avoiding anything that can be confrontational, because that doesn't go well.
Yeah. And I think all of us, you know, with experience have seen that, right? I've seen faculty get into arguments with site visit team during the presentation. And that just doesn't help anything, right? It doesn't help anything. So exactly right, Schaefer. I like that, you know, viewing them as investors. That's a great approach also. That's very cool. You know, the last thing I would say on this, you know, convey quantitative and qualitative growth. You know, the numbers are easy to show, graphs are nice, but also talk about the qualitative growth. For the CNT, when I first arrived, the very my first day on the job was the site visit. That was day one for me. And obviously I didn't have to do anything because it was, you know, day one, I didn't know anything. But the site visit team, you know, came up to me many times during the break, and each of them individually said, you know, that the big thing that CNT needs and that you're going to have to do is make deeper, richer engagements. They wanted the numbers too. We had fairly low membership in the industry program, and that membership really just wrote the check and sent it in. There wasn't a lot of interaction. So being able to demonstrate the qualitative growth also, how is the industry engaging with the center? And it's more than just the numbers, but it's painting that picture. It's telling that story. It's about putting down the narrative in a way that they can understand that the impact is really happening beyond just the numbers. And that's well worth spending time on.
I'm in for 15 seconds and say that my experience in now a number of site visits is that each of you can actually, by being engaged and involved in the other sessions and sort of being Johnny on the spot whenever the opportunity comes up, putting something in the chat, you can move the needle in the evaluation. And you can drive some of the things that will get put into the site visit report. People, the site visit team will note what you've said. And that can be very valuable, can make the difference between mid-band, top-band, just that.
Yeah, excellent point, Randy. And, you know, to that point, you know, the site visit team does give the center overnight questions that you have to be prepared to answer the next morning. And there'd be times we'd be up till 3 or 4 or 5 a.m. writing those. Stick with it. You know, there were lots of times where, you know, the AD, 5 o'clock hit, they were gone. You know, that our marketing person, they were gone. And my first day when I was there, people are saying, yeah, you can go. It's your first day. You know, like, no, I'm staying. One, because it was a learning opportunity for me, right? There they are debating and dividing the questions and trying to figure out how to answer them. And so it was a great learning experience for me. But years later, faculty still remember that first day on the job, I stayed up all night with them. And sometimes I was just wordsmithing with them, but I was pitching in where I could. They remembered that. And so it's a, you know, finding, you know, Randy called it being Johnny on the spot, but really, it, you know, even beyond that, it's being a team member and helping out your colleagues. The site visit can be arduous. And so it's one of those bonding opportunities, right? Like war bonds you when you're in the foxhole together. Same thing, when you're having to spend the night answering the NSF questions, it's a bonding experience. You want to be there for that. And so even beyond just being there for the site visit, being there all the way, helping pick up the chairs afterwards, whatever it is, those little things really bond you to your colleagues at the center. And that pays dividends, not only from just a work experience, but also when you need something from them later, you're much more likely to have that collaborative spirit from them back. After the site visit and the industry day, send out thank yous. Oh, I also skip this, get the IB to their flights. You know, I'd print up maps to the airport. I'd get taxis and now Ubers. I would give the train route, you know, however they wanted to get themselves to the airport. Sometimes I drove, industry folks to the airport afterwards. So great windshield time to talk, but helping them get to their flights, again, making it a no stress event for them really is a positive thing. I send out thank yous afterwards to the faculty and students who presented during industry day and to the IB for coming and many times presenting during industry day. I would also collect those evaluation forms. Like I said, I would put them in their placemat, in their folder. I really encourage them to fill that out because I use that for planning the next year's industry day. It was really key. I would then share the results at the leadership meeting that we'd have following the event and do a debrief with, you know, everyone at my center, you know, for the AD, how the industry day go from your perspective, you know, talking to the students, talking to the center directors, education director, you know, how did it go from where you were sitting? Because you've got a million things going on, both industry day and during the site visit. So you can't be watching everything. So being able to get feedback from lots of different sources helps you fill in whatever gaps might have happened today. And then after, you know, have fun with it. Is your day to shine. But afterwards, take a day off because you need to just detox after a whirlwind of activity there. COVID considerations, you know, gosh, with being virtual, it was such a bummer not to be able to do these in person, but it was so fantastic to have much more attendance from, you know, because now there's no budget issues in getting industry members there. So I would try to get 3 members from every member company to attend the industry day. And I would even give prospective companies an opportunity to hop onto certain parts because I could control when they, you know, it's awkward to pull someone from a room saying, okay, you're not a member of the center, you can listen to this part, but now you got to get out so we can do this other thing. It's much easier on Zoom to say, okay, thanks, we'll dismiss the folks that aren't members. Thanks for sitting on these sessions. It's a great way to be able to have people that are thinking about joining the center be able to kind of see a little bit about what the center is all about. Having virtual recordings are available. It's more difficult to network, obviously, on Zoom. But one thing that I did this past year was have a keynote speaker during our industry day. I never could have gotten him to come and speak in person at industry day, but on Zoom, I was able to make that happen. And then for the evening, I had an optional event where I had the author from the movie, The Arrival, come and speak about the future of technology. He's done a lot of work in writing and neurotechnology. And so it was just kind of a fun, you know, fireside chat with someone who's, you know, pseudo famous. And they really like that. The industry members really love the fact that they were able to engage that way. So there's some, being remote gives you some opportunities to make things interesting that you couldn't do in the past. But again, hopefully COVID is a thing of the past. And so we'll be back to in person shortly.
Does anyone plan to do a hybrid meeting even within person?
We probably will later this year. In the fall, I will do an industry day. Again, we're graduated, so it's not tied to the site visit anymore. So I'm planning a fall event where I will likely have a remote option also.
Our site visit is October, by which time, God willing, all the restrictions are over. But people are kind of spoiled at not traveling now. So,
yeah, how about it? And if it allows me to have 3 reps from every member company come remotely, then hey, that's great, because one of my goals is to always have, you know, 3 champions at a company, not just one, because attrition, retirement, whatever, it's a killer. It's a killer. I think, let me see. Yes, that's it. I know we went over, but thank you for hanging on here. Other questions that you guys want to hit? Like I said, this presentation and it'll be posted on the ERC, the NSF ERC folder, where we've put the other content from the other innovation ecosystem modules. If anyone wants, you know, my worksheet or sample agendas or sample presentations from the site visit, whatever, feel free to reach out. I'm happy to share what we've done in the past.
This is John. Thanks, this has been really helpful. Great stuff. And I really appreciate all the presenters. Very practical information for what's a hectic time. But I think your tips and wisdom will be very helpful. So thank you.
That's great. I'm glad to hear it. And, you know, when folks are going through their first industry day or maybe their second, third, whatever, if you want other eyes on it, other ideas, want to talk through some challenges, whatever, I know myself and your mentor and really anyone in the ILO group would be happy to hop on the phone for a while and talk through things with you if you'd like.
Great.
All right.
Great.
With that, I'm going to dismiss unless there's any final comments from Deborah or Randy.
No comments, particularly, except that I will say that everything that you and Schaefer said is really, very important insights. So they know what they're doing. Listen to them carefully.
Great. Well, guys, thanks for being on. Thanks for sticking through the end. Randy, Deborah, thank you for your help in kicking us off. And good luck on your industry days, reports, and site visits.
Thanks.
See you guys. Appreciate it. Take care. Thanks.